Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it's my pleasure to have as my guest, Robert Paler. Robert Paler was paralyzed from the neck down during the Collegiate Rugby National Championship after a spinal cord injury left him with the prognosis that he would never walk or move his hands again. Refusing to accept that fate, Robert embarked on an extraordinary journey of recovery, relearning life's most basic functions and defying the odds to walk again. Now an inspirational speaker and author, Robert shares his powerful story and the mental tools that helped him overcome quadriplegia with organizations worldwide. Through his keynote, Paralyzed to Powerful, Robert inspires audiences to conquer what paralyzes them and turn their adversity into triumph. Robert, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It's a pleasure having you on the program today.
Thank you so much, Dave. And I don't know if it shows through the camera, but I'm blushing as red as a tomato from the intro. So I appreciate it. It's going to be fun.
Well, it's a good thing I didn't read your longer bio. You might have been blushing three times the color.
Yeah, we'd have to do a part two for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Robert's full bio, which is extremely impressive, will be in the episode notes. We got introduced by Steve Ramona. Steve Ramona is the master at matching up potential podcast guests with podcasters. We had a great pre-chat, and this led to this moment today. And I've been excited to get going with the questions that I have for you. And I'm anxious to have our audience learn about you, your journey, and what you've done to transcend adversity.
Yeah, thank you. It's going to be a lot of fun. From our conversation too, it's amazing just like how many connections there are through different experiences that really bring out the same results. I think it's interesting when stuff like that happens, that it just kind of shows its truth. And I'm excited to talk about a lot of that.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear. So
yeah.
First question for you. May 6, 2017, that was a day that really changed everything for you, influenced your life path and your passions that you embark on today. Give our audience a glimpse into how the day started and how it ended.
Yeah, so that is a big day for me, May 6th of 2017. And I really woke up thinking it was going to be the best day of my life. So I'm starting as a sophomore for the number one rugby team at the college level in America. Starting as a sophomore for a team of this caliber just isn't an easy or a common thing to do. At this time, we're going for our 31st national championship, with the tournament only even having existed for about 45 years. So more than half of the years that this tournament has even existed, Cal Rugby is winning the national championship. So my dreams are really coming together for me in my life. I love the sport of rugby. I'm here at this amazing academic institution of UC Berkeley. Like, it's a really good time to be me. And then it's very early on in this game that we're competing in what's called a maul, which is when the bigger guys, we group up in a single unit, we start pushing to advance the ball, and the defense, they come in from the front and they have to try to stop us from moving forward. So very much a boiler room for the big guys thrive. And I was a big guy. So 6'5", 245 pounds. I'm on the field to move people, just moving bodies that don't want to get out of the way. And we're 5 meters out from scoring. So I'm practically drooling here on the field thinking, let's go, Robert, drive this thing in. But as I do that, the opposing players, they start making all these illegal moves and the referee's not calling anything. First, three players come in from the side of the maul, which are all infractions, things you can't do, but the referee's not calling it. And then another player binds me in a headlock. So he's got my chin kind of pinned down to my chest. Now, normally in rugby, that's an automatic yellow or red card. You do that, you're gone, but the ref doesn't call it. So there's really not a lot you can do as an athlete in this situation. I think one option is you stand up and you throw your arms out to the side and say, hey, ref, what's going on? You going to call this thing? Or number two, you just keep moving forward. And that was my decision, keep moving forward. So my back is kind of flat, shoulder level down and forward. I'm pushing and another player chops me down by my legs. So I start falling down and this guy continues to improve his bind around my neck. I can't get my head up and I just close my eyes. I grit my teeth. I feel this god awful crunch in my neck and then just poof, can't move anything. Can't feel anything. Totally clear and conscious. I never lost that sense of consciousness for a second, but completely numb and motionless from my collarbone down, and my thoughts are going wild. So what happened was as I went down, because I couldn't get my head up, the top of my head made impact with the ground and my body kept going forward. So my forehead went to my chest, literally nose into my sternum, pinned there, and the disc in between my C5, C6 vertebrae had ruptured into my spinal cord, causing instantaneous paralysis. And I'm laying there screaming and the referee's not even stopping play. He says, play on. So you have multiple phases of rugby where they are just meters away from me. And I'm feeling like this is my worst nightmare that I have just been thrust into and I can't wake up. And the medical staff is sprinting out there on the field trying to take care of me. If someone would have landed on me in that moment, I certainly would have had a more severe injury. I might not even be having this conversation today. I might have died on the field. So luckily, we score on this team and it causes a stoppage in play and I'm getting all the medical attention. At this time, it's rather hard to breathe. I'm flat on my chest and my head is sort of tucked down and to the left and I'm dealing with a lot of pain in my neck, but you know, the adrenaline's pumping. That's not really the issue here. I am just terrified that I can't move anything. And they're doing their tests. They're like, Robert, can you feel this? They're stroking my arm. They're touching my toes. I mean, nothing. They put their hand in mine. They're like, all right, squeeze my thumb. I can't do anything. Wiggle your toes. Like the only thing I can move is my neck. And that's like the last thing that you want to move. You need to stay perfectly still and stabilized. So they roll me on my back. My parents come out. They were at this game. And I knew that this would be the most difficult point of this journey for me, seeing my parents for the first time in this state, because I tried to make them proud my whole life. And I tried to be really, you know, show that strength. And in this moment, I was weak and I was broken. And I remember my dad, he falls to his knees to my right. He grabs my hand. I couldn't feel it. My mom is also right behind me. And they're just saying, we will always be there for you. We love you more than anything. And the only thing I could say in my tears was, I love you more than anything in the world. So it was very clear that I needed immediate medical attention. They stretched me off the field. And another really tough moment was I really wanted to give a thumbs up, because that's what a lot of injured players do when they're getting off on a stretcher, right? They give a thumbs up and they say, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to make it through this. But I knew that it wouldn't happen. And I'm kind of like, I'm avoiding this as folks are on their feet clapping. And one of my family friends was over there watching the game. And he says, Robert, give us a thumbs up. I was trying to get a read on the situation. Man, I try as hard as I can and just nothing. And I'm thinking, this is really bad. So this time, I don't really know what's going to happen, but my suspicion is very bad. I'm kind of thinking my life is over. I'm not going to move anything ever again. And I'm in the ambulance going over to the hospital and a paramedic is kind of saying, okay, we're going to take you there. Here's the steps that are going to ensue from here. Do you have any questions? And I say, am I going to walk again? And he says, I don't know. And you know, it's funny. Like, I think most people would think like that's horrible news. For me, it was kind of like the Dumb and Dumber question. Like, so you're saying there's a chance? Like, he said he doesn't know. That's not a no. And I get to the hospital, we do a bunch of scans, x-ray, CT scan, MRI, come back to my room and my doctor visits me there, a neurologist over there in Santa Clara. He's got a really bad look on his face. He's very matter of fact. Robert, what happened to you is bad. It's really bad. And the reality is you will never walk again. You will never move your hands. And we're going to do our best so that one day you can do something like pick up a piece of pizza and bring it to your face. And if you can just do that, you made it. If you can just feed yourself, you beat all the odds. And then my doctor, he doesn't stop there. He recommends a surgery to me, spinal fusion surgery. So he explains what I had explained earlier, that the disc in between my C5-6 vertebrae had ruptured into my spinal cord. And in order to prevent further damage, start stabilizing this region, you recommended this fusion surgery, essentially permanently casting the vertebrae above and below the C5 and 6 so that there could be that stability. So he says my best chance at recovery, but it's a potentially life-threatening surgery. So my body is already freaking out with my nervous system being disconnected. I peaked up a fever to 105 at one point. I was kind of rolling steady, mostly at 103. And the surgery is performed through the front of the neck. They move your esophagus over to operate on your spinal cord. My body's already going through a lot of trauma at this point. He says I might not wake up from the surgery. And I had 1 hour to make a decision of whether I would like to go into it or not. So I need to get my affairs in order quick. And my faith is very important to me, always has been. And in this moment, I'm thinking I need to invite God into this whole situation in a very direct sense. So I'm Catholic. And of course, the sacraments are very important in the Catholic practice. And so I wanted to have a priest sent over to give me the sacrament of anointing the sick. That way, kind of thinking, if I survive this, you know, I've really invited God in this journey. And if I die, I'm like cleansed for heaven. I'm getting ready for that next stage. It was essentially like receiving my last rites. Yep. So I call my spiritual director at the time. And he says he'll send a priest over, but he gives me this piece of advice before he hangs up the phone that just changed everything for me. It was like this catalyst, precipice type point that really helped me throughout this entire journey and gave me a lot of power in what should have been a powerless situation. And he said, Robert, throughout this journey, there's gonna be a lot of things you can't control, but the one thing you'll always have control over is your mindset. So your positivity, your ambition, your willingness to wake up every day and fight is up to you. This injury can't take that away from you. So I got to think in that moment, like I didn't have a lot. You know, I didn't have the odds on my side. I didn't have some doctor saying that everything's going to be okay and signs of life showing up in my body. But I had this decision to respond in a way that would make me better regardless of my circumstance. It was this internal decision and response to be able to, for a moment, block out some of those emotions and just how much was crushing down on me and be able to make a more clear-headed decision. Am I going to go to the surgery? And what's my mental approach going to be like as these challenges continue to come my way? I can control my mindset. So it gave me a lot of mental clarity that I would go into the surgery. And my brother holds a phone in front of me. I FaceTime my best friends. I tell them that I might not see them ever again. And I love them. And the priest came in, received the sacrament. I said prayers with my family. I get rolled into that operating room. They put that anesthesia mask over my face. You start counting down from 100. I think I made it to like 97 and lights are out. That concludes May 6th of 2017 for me.
You know, it's amazing, Robert, listening to your story. Your story just indicates how life can turn on a dime.
Yeah.
1 minute you're waking up anticipating being part of one of the greatest athletic events in your career.
Mm-hmm.
And how old were you when the accident occurred?
I was 20 years old.
At 20 years old, you're facing your mortality and thinking this might be the last time I see those people that I care for.
Right.
The other thing is that inspiration sometimes comes in some of the most unanticipated places. Mm-hmm. Listening to that priest say, how you deal with this is going to depend on your mindset. It's going to depend on your attitude. And I think in some way that kind of consciously or unconsciously set the stage for the work that you're going to do and you were going to continue to be doing. So those are just a couple of things that really, really struck me.
Yeah.
A question. Did you ever hear from the opposing player? Did he ever contact you? Did he ever try to make amends or ask for forgiveness, if you don't mind me asking?
That is a whole can of worms. So at first, I didn't really know exactly how all this went down. You know, the course of this mall was maybe like 5 seconds. There's a lot of contact points going on. And the game footage had a pretty bad angle from the press box. You just kind of saw this pile goes down and I don't get up. And we didn't really know exactly what had happened on that first day, but this was a nationally televised game and there was a lot of bystanders as well taking footage. And this evidence started to produce itself from various angles that what happened to me was clearly a bind around my neck, sustained and improved all the way down to the ground to where I couldn't get my head up. If you kept all those other penalties in there, I would have just slid flat on the ground like I had done hundreds, maybe thousands of times before that in practice. and I would have gotten right back up. But it was this one move that really caused this. So my coaches visited me numerous occasions in the hospital, but there was this one time, it was maybe 3 days after my injury, where they had received this evidence and thought, we think that Robert and his family should at least know what really happened here. And they have these pictures and videos that they don't show to me at the time, but they show my parents. And when I hear this news, I'm filled with a rage that I can't even describe. Because newsflash, when I wake up from the surgery, I'm still paralyzed. And I had pneumonia, so I couldn't breathe on my own. I couldn't swallow anything. At this time, I had not eaten for 3 days. They were trying to shove a tube up my nose and into my stomach, but we were failing as my nose would continue to inflame. I'm like enduring extreme torture here. And all of this is not because I did something stupid that I knew I shouldn't have done. And it wasn't just like pure happenstance either. It was the actions of another player to break the laws of the game that I'm in this situation right now. And I'm thinking like, okay, I got my roads here that I can go down. And one is really hold on to this rage and maybe let this be like some fire that really fuels me. And maybe that can be like some positive motivation for me there. But I'm pretty much going to think the rest of my life, like I think horribly of this person and I'm going to, you know, I'm really going to try and slander him. Or I'm going to go this other way, this path of forgiveness, to really not look behind me and what lies there, but to be looking forward because that's where I'm going. And in order to really fully do that, I need to remove these negative attachments from my heart. Yeah. My faith really came into this a lot, knowing that this is what I've been taught. And it wasn't just like when it's easy, it's most important when it's difficult. So I decided I'm going to say I forgive this person regardless of how I feel. So it was like a total fake it till you make it type thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it's interesting. I didn't really see like a lot of the what's going on in my mind and like with neuroplasticity and really being able to rewire the way you think and your emotions over a long period of time through your actions. But over time, people would ask me, Robert, what do you think of this guy? What's your take? And I would always say, I forgive him and I wish him well. I truly forgive him, regardless of all that hate I felt inside, because that's not something I could release by just saying a few words. But as I continued to not say those words, I think I was just not putting wood on that fire and fueling it, letting it burn hotter. I was kind of just letting time run its course, to where as I continued to not engage in those thoughts and emotions, it would just slowly burn itself out, where over the course of months, I'm finally freed. And it wasn't easy. This person has never reached out to me and they've never said they're sorry, which that I think that made the journey more difficult there on the onset of things. But it's through making that intentional decision. It kind of comes back to that control your mindset principle. Yep. Like I can't control what I'm feeling right now, but I can control what I say. And I'm going to say I forgive this person, not just for him and to remove guilt from his heart, but I think more importantly, to remove those negative attachments from me. I think that's the real gift of that forgiveness gives us.
Absolutely. I was interviewing another guest about forgiveness, and he had to forgive some really traumatic events that were done to him. Mm-hmm. And he said, forgiveness isn't for the other person as much as it is for us.
Yes. So totally true. And just having that approach first, that's the first step, is realizing that forgiveness is so much more about us and removing those negative attachments. Like it's always the answer. So I think once you have like a lot of clarity around that, then, and you have this kind of realization, okay, I can choose what I say. And I think over time, I'm going to see progress in this. Then you can have some trust in this process. And just everybody out there, I just can't think of any reason why we shouldn't forgive someone. I think it's one of those very few universal rules of life.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to read one phrase, or actually a couple of different phrases that I got from your promo video on mm-hmm. your website.
Mm-hmm.
And just, we're going to play first thing that comes into your head kind of thing when I read these. The first one is, we don't accomplish anything important on our own.
Yeah, it's just the power of team. I got so many stories if we really want to like dive into it and just how people have shown up for me. But we're talking like my mom sleeping on a chair by my bedside for 2 months. When I was really in the thick of it. I mean, 2 months, she was just there in a chair. And for a total of about 9 months with me in the hospital in that first year that I was doing my rehabilitation, I mean, she was pumping down on my diaphragm when I couldn't breathe and I had pneumonia, because she said that she wouldn't just sit there and watch her son die. And we've got my brother and my dad being there with me constantly, and all my rugby teammates, this global rugby community, and just incredible people from rugby or not, giving me their love, giving me their support. I just wouldn't be here if it weren't for them today. I think nothing important is accomplished alone. And there's just really not a moment that I spent by myself. This isn't all me.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, without community, we can't get through our toughest challenges.
No, we really can't. And I still rely on it so much to this day. And, you know, as I continue to have like progress and stuff, like that pride can really kind of build up within you in an unhealthy way, thinking like, oh, I got this. I can do this on my own. Sometimes that creeps up. And I think I just have to like continually squash it and realize it, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for the people who have helped me. In the end of the day, I got to make a decision and I got to choose to do this rehabilitation and keep moving forward. But I'm not even able to have that decision if it's not for the people who are really helping me. So I think that's an important inventory for us all to take when we're dealing with adversity. Like, how can I start looping other people into this? Even if it's just something as small as I need to talk to my friends more, or spend more time with my spouse or my kids, like stuff like that, I think is just really important for our mental health and then getting different approaches to be able to accomplish something.
I'm a teacher, and I tell my students, if you didn't take courses with me, I couldn't do what I love. So you're very important to me. And don't think for a minute that I'm going to take that for granted. And, you know, without them, I wouldn't be a teacher. I'd be talking to an empty classroom or talking to myself, either one of the two.
Yeah, right. I'd talk to myself. I'd do that. I'd do it all the time.
Hey, in the words of George Carlin, I talk to myself because my answers are the only ones I'll accept.
That's perfect.
That's so when anybody ever asks me, I tell them, well, it's because I got a lot of money in the bank. I can talk to myself. So I'll get around and tell them I'm eccentric. So, but hey, talking to ourselves a way we can work some things out for ourselves. You know, we just hash it out, and, you know, and sometimes we need to rely on our inner voice to get us to the next step.
Yeah, we really do. And, you know, it's kind of funny. That's something that I had to be really intentional about, was that inner voice, because there was a lot of that cartoon like Tom and Jerry, where you got the angel and the devil really in the voice, in the ear of someone. I dealt with a lot of doubt throughout all of this, a lot of self-pity really creeping its way in and thinking, why am I going through this? I had to be really in tune with having a good mental diet. It was a big tool for me. And as an athlete, you know, we all understand a physical diet, right? It's nasty in, nasty out. Or if we eat well, our bodies are going to perform better. And I think the same thing goes for our minds. So the more we're taking in negative information, or having negative interactions, or really engaging in kind of that negative self-talk in our inner mind, the more negative we're going to be as people. And we're not able to take on our challenges as well. But if we're taking more positive information, positive conversations, positive affirmations, I think over time, we're going to be more positive people and we're more able to take on our challenges. So it was a really intentional thing when I was in that hospital to have my brother hold my phone in front of me. And we're going to start scrolling through messages from supporters, or we're going to go on YouTube and look up stories like Quadriplegic Walks Again, like to give me something to really visualize and fight for. And it helped that inner voice that I was dealing with to be able to like really lean into that positive when I needed kind of everything dialed in to be able to take on each day.
Well, you know, the visualization piece is important, because I know I've talked to other athletes who they've done visualization. Like a golfer will visualize hitting the perfect tee shot into the middle of the fairway and then the perfect approach shot. They'll visualize that and see the outcome before they execute the physical movements. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to visualize what you see your next outcome or your life being like, or the results that you want. It's a non-fancy way to talk about manifestation.
It is. Yeah, it's so critically important too. It kind of comes back to like that first decision. Like when we were talking about forgiveness, like knowing what's good for you. I think like just belief is such an important first step. There's, I think it's like Henry Ford has a quote, and it's something along the lines of like, if you think you can. And if you don't, that you won't. Along those lines, right? It's just like, why would we ever fight for something that we don't really truly believe in? So I think especially with those really daunting challenges or goals that we have in our lives, there needs to be intentional time seeing in our mind's eye what it is that we want to achieve, so we build that hunger and appetite. I mean, that's something I did constantly when I was in the hospital. And when I was bedridden for a couple of weeks, I could not get out of bed as I was dealing with pneumonia and my inability to swallow. And in those late nights when there was no therapy going on and it was mostly just me alone with my thoughts, I decided not to engage in those really negative things, just like thinking about how much I'd lost and how much things had changed. But I'm thinking about these moments, like, what's it going to feel like when I can get in those parallel bars in a rehab facility and I can like take that first step? And I'm just like imagining myself like gritting my teeth, like giving everything I can and watching that foot go in front of me. And, you know, examples like that and going back to school and being able to have a job and really produce in my life goals that I've had for my entire life, that was giving me that fuel, and all was that visualization. And that's something I can do when I couldn't move anything.
Yeah. And again, it's important. And I think, you know, those positive experiences we had in an athlete, I think it sounded like that also helped you during your, you know, during the most challenging time of your life as well too. So
it's huge. Yeah, I think that's like something that we all need to be intentional about, is like building that strong foundation so that if adversity ever does hit us, we're going to be able to stand strong on that foundation. And athletics was just such a huge part of that for me. I'm thinking, like, we're waking up early for trainings. We're number one in the nation for a reason. It's because we work really hard. And you know, we try to pride ourselves on working harder than our opponents. And that was really instilled in me that if I hit the weight room and the next day I wasn't sore, I was pissed off. I mean, I was angry at myself. I'm like, wow, I wasted a workout. And so, you know, was able to translate that into a rehabilitation environment, or even things where, hey, it's 3 a.m. and the respiratory therapist in the room getting ready to slam down on my diaphragm for about a half hour to get this mucus out of my lungs so I can breathe. It was kind of that decision where it's like, you know what? I've done hard things in my past. I can do this again. So it kind of formed my perspective to just realize the value of knuckling down during difficult situations and doing the hard thing, and really just like being able to continually focus on that positive outcome. It's like when you're down in a game, you know, 10 minutes left and you're losing, you're not just going to give up. That's when you work harder. So I was able to access that through that athletic mindset.
I got one more statement for you.
Yeah.
This is going to sound really totally off the beaten path, but I'm going to throw this out at you anyway. What went through your head the first time you were able to wiggle your toe?
Oh, man. It was huge. So it was Father's Day of 2017. So it was June. And at that time, I was doing this exercise where I was laying in my bed and I would try to move every muscle in my body for 20 reps. So I'd start up at my traps, which I couldn't move. So I'd shrug my shoulders 20 reps and come down, you know, and like move my biceps. And then I'd try and do things that I couldn't move. Like I close my hand into a fist, but I'm visualizing me closing my hand to the fist as I'm sending this signal, trying to kind of bridge this gap that has been caused through my spinal cord injury all the way down to my toes. And at this time, you know, it's late at night. I think it was like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And I'm looking down on my nasty cleat feet, all yellowed out from painting cleats. I mean, I'm trying as hard as I can to get this thing to move, but it had been 6 weeks of attempts at this point. And I saw just like a flicker in my pinky toe. I'm like, pinch me, I'm dreaming. And so I kind of like, I give another effort and it goes again, and I just start bawling. And I'm telling my mom, like, could have wiggled my toes. And I'm calling everybody and their mother to come into this room and watch me wiggle these nasty cleat feet looking toes. It was just this huge moment for something that didn't functionally change my life, right? Just being able to wiggle my toes isn't going to really do anything for my life. But it was this incredible sign of hope to show that things are starting to connect here. I'm having signals that are going all the way down to my toes. So it really changed things from my recovery standpoint, where my physical therapists were now able to really lean into my lower extremities so I could start working on walking, because you got to justify all this stuff to insurance. So that was something that they kind of needed, that win, and just a huge bit of motivation. But I think there's a lesson for all of us there to realize just how much we take for granted in our lives, because it's obvious why that was such a huge moment for me. It's because I lost the ability to wiggle my toes, and I started realizing just how much I took for granted, you know, my ability to walk and go to school and work and breathe. I mean, all these things, I didn't really give it that much of a thought at one point in my life. And I started realizing just how lucky I was to have those in my life. So there's like that saying that you don't know what you have until you don't have it anymore.
Yep.
I think it's such a horrible way to live. Why should we wait to lose something before we start showing appreciation for it? I think we just need to spend more time taking a real mental inventory of those things that we have, looking out to people who don't have those things and feeling that inner empathy for them. But I know in my situation, when I look at people who have what I don't have, I'm not filled with jealousy. I just want to really appreciate it and draw inspiration from me dealing with what I have. So I think that's the approach we should all take, is look at those who have less than us and not use it to think like, woe is them, but I'm really inspired by what they do. And I'm not going to take for granted what they wish so badly they would have that I do have. So that's a big moment and wiggling my toes and taught me a lot.
And sometimes the smallest little thing that we accomplish, the smallest, what seems to be small to somebody else,
yeah,
is the one thing that's kind of like the turning point that gets us one to appreciate what we have, give us a sign of hope. And also it teaches us, I think, from a gratitude practice to be happy for what we can do. Like every day I get up and I'm thankful for the fact that I got up another day, that
yeah,
the good Lord allowed me to complete the previous day and then wake up to start the other day, because yeah, I don't take anything for granted. I mean, especially with the stories that I've heard over the past 22 years since my own life-altering tragedy, mm-hmm, and the stories that I hear on this podcast, I don't take anything for granted. Nothing is, right, no day is given. So each yeah day that we have, we need to make the most of that day that we're given to us, because we never know when it's going to be our last.
Right.
Or in your circumstance, we never know when life as you know it is going to change.
Mm-hmm. You're completely right. And I think that so much of that is gained through looking outside of ourselves. And that's a real intentional practice that I needed to use early on. I still use to this day to maintain that level of gratitude, is looking up stories of like cancer patients, complete quadriplegics, veterans who come back from war without limbs, people living in dire situations on other sides of the world in third world countries, like people who are just going through terrible situations, something that nobody should ever have to go through. But I look at them, explain how they make their lives happen every day, and a lot of times they have a smile on their face. Mm. And I'm just thinking, remind me not to complain about anything ever again, because these people would give anything to be able to get up out of bed. So why would I be thinking like, oh, I have to get up out of bed early yeah in the morning? They'd be thinking, I get to just get up out of bed. And it's hard to have that kind of perspective if you're not looking outside yourself and accessing that empathy. I think that sincere empathy is a real bridge that connects us to the struggles of others and helps us learn from a situation that we ourselves don't have to go through, because I've gone through a lot with quadriplegia. Trust me, it's been a journey and I wouldn't wish this upon anyone, but at the same time, I wouldn't wish this away, because it's taught me so much and it's given me so much that I can give to others. Now, that doesn't mean that I recommend anybody go out there and break their necks so they can have what I have through this journey. But you must have that empathy to connect with what I've been through and gain those real incredible insights that I've been able to gain through an incredible journey of battling quadriplegia.
And you know, Robert, for me, and I'm sure you would say the same thing, you would wish that your worst tragedy hadn't happened for you to find your greater purpose. I would wish that my worst tragedy, you know, losing a child, wouldn't have happened for me to find my greatest purpose. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that these situations happened. How are we going to transcend them? And mm-hmm in retrospect, 22 years after my daughter's transition, I took a look and said, as much as I miss her physically, as much as I miss her physical presence, my challenges with her death and transition were necessary for my evolution and growth.
Yeah.
And like I said, I wish I could have had something less traumatic, mm-hmm, be responsible for that, but we don't have any control over what challenges are going to befall us in this lifetime.
Yeah, we don't. No, it's so interesting with what you've gone through. You've been able to make such an impact on just so many different people, all stemming from this one extreme tragedy. I think like we have to really focus on that when tragedy does come our way. We don't have time machines in our garages that we can go into and, you know, try and make things another way. It's a fact of life. So I think the less we ruminate on wishing that things were different and the more we focus on what we can do with this situation, that really helps us get through that journey. And I know it certainly helped me in being able to share this story. And in the beginning, just provide rehab updates to other people and bring something good out of so much bad, made it to where I don't view my injury as this curse. And I don't just see the things that I've lost. I really focus on the pride that I have for what I've gained in being able to help others. I wouldn't have had this though, if there wasn't like that selfless approach of how can I take this worst thing that's ever happened to me and use it to the benefit of someone else? Because if I couldn't share this story, everything I do would just be difficulties. It would just be suffering. Every little part of my day is more difficult now, but that's okay because I'm able to share this story and help others. That's a key to kind of overcoming those difficult moments, focusing on that.
Well, and through developing our own resilience comes service.
Yep. Yeah. That service component is so critical too. And it reminds me of having just like a workout buddy.
No.
You know?
No.
Where it's like, it's not easy going to the gym. I don't want to do it every day. When I know there's someone there waiting on me and expecting me to be accountable to them, I'm going to show up. And I see that now. I post rehab videos every single day. And here I am 3,000 days plus into this, and I'll post the day counter. I like to keep track of those days. And that's like an accountability piece for me, but comes back to that service. I'm doing it not just to look at the day counter myself, but to share that with others.
Well, and then every day you demonstrate more and more resilience, and you model resilience for those individuals who are having trouble transcending their own challenges.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. It's really that consistency over time. That's the focus. It's not just like a few really intense days of effort. It's lower on the intensity scale, but it's very disciplined and consistent approach over time. And I think that's more difficult because I think a lot of people look at me and they're like, I just simply couldn't go through what you've done. And I think like anybody could be a quadriplegic for a day or a week or probably even like a month or a couple months, but here I am more than 8 years into this thing. And that requires a very disciplined approach. And I think that's one of the things I'm most proud of is just that consistency over time.
Agreed. Let's switch gears for a minute and talk about your book.
Yeah.
Paralyzed the Powerful. Tell us what inspired you to write it and what do you want readers to take away from it?
Yeah. I mean, this book has really been started since like the first week of my injury, where one of my best friend's mom started off a GoFundMe campaign to help pay for the rehabilitation expenses of my injury. As you can imagine, breaking your neck is not a good financial decision. We needed help. And that's when I started sharing this story with rehab updates and seeing people tell me some really difficult things. Like, I'm going through stage 4 cancer right now, or I just lost my spouse, or one of my children. I'm going through the most difficult thing I've ever gone through in my whole life. But by witnessing your faith and perseverance through this, you're really helping me. And thank you for that. So I started seeing this gift start to come out of this injury. And I just continued to dive deeper and deeper into speaking and then thinking, what's the best way to really scale this in a more long form format? It's in a book. So when COVID hit, there wasn't a lot of speeches going on. So I started to pivot and think like, well, what can I do? I can start writing. And I started putting together this outline and then found a wonderful co-author, Jason Cole. It was funny. He's a Stanford guy. So you got to think like the big peace treaties of our time, like Stalin joining in with the Allies in World War II. It's like that, you know, a Stanford guy joining on with a Cal guy for a book. Mm-hmm. And we went through this process, which was about 4 years of really trying to take these moments that have changed my life through 8 years of quadriplegia, put it in that form. But through that, every chapter is a tool that has helped me in overcoming this injury, all while guiding that story along pre-chronologically. So it's Paralyzed to Powerful. And the first question I ask is, what paralyzes you? I want people to be inspired by my story, but I really want them to learn more about themselves through this journey. So it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the online retailers. I did an audiobook myself. I narrated it. And it's just been wonderful seeing how it's making a difference in folks' lives.
Yeah, that's a book that I need to add to my own collection.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that. And I've really enjoyed people enjoying like the questions that I've put in there, because that was kind of the whole purpose of this. I don't want this to just be some memoir where it's all about me. I really want people learning more about themselves. So I think you'd enjoy it. Yeah.
I think I would too. I've Yeah, since my own life-altering tragedy, I've been drawn to books by other tragedy survivors and thrivers, and you know, so that this book will be a nice one for my collection and something that hopefully I can reference to my students as well too.
Totally, totally. Yeah, and isn't it funny how when you look through these stories of other tragedy survivors, you really start seeing a lot of the same principles crop up where, you know, I'm not like a lifelong academic and I haven't run studies. I don't have any letters after my last name, but I have this intense lived experience as many do. And in trying to really think of like, what's got me through this? What can I share with others? Yep. It's amazing the synchronicities that you see with other folks. There's just, it's not just kind of like whatever floats your boat kind of thing. It seems like there's lots of truth to this. And I love it when you really find the evidence of it neurologically and what's going on psychologically in the mind.
Well, regardless of our background, regardless of our educational pedigree, tragedy is going to affect us mind, body, and spirit the same way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the tools that we use to develop resilience are very similar. You know, because there's been some tried and true ways to get through tragedy that have helped us develop resilience, whether it's through support, whether it's going within, communing with nature, embracing different perspectives. As for you also, embracing your faith and relying on your faith to get you through your challenges. And so, yeah, I mean, you can throw education, you can throw job background out the window when it comes to that. That is kind of the great equalizer. Tragedy is a great equalizer among all of us and how we respond to it.
Yeah, it is. Challenges are about the only thing that's guaranteed in life. I really gain so much inspiration from people who go through that. I hate that people have to go through tragedy, but I just love seeing them get out of it. And I get so much from it. So it's interesting. It's like that point that you made about, you know, I wish that I didn't have to go through this to be able to have this output and making a difference like this in others' lives. I think like being able to really embrace that gift that comes from it in our own struggles and of others is the beauty of it all.
Yeah, and it is. It really is. Mm-hmm. Getting back to your mission as a speaker, what is your mission as a speaker? And how does that align with the messages in your book?
Yeah, so they're very interconnected. My mission as a speaker is to take what happened to me, which should have been the worst thing that could ever happen to me, and turn it into a gift that I can share with others. So I go across the country now. It's my full-time job to share this story and share the tools that have helped me in overcoming quadriplegia. Because we're all paralyzed by something. I mean, think doubt, grief, anxiety, fear of failure, fear of the unknown, change. Like, there's so many different things that can hold us back in our lives. And I think these tools that have helped me in overcoming this physical paralysis and the mental and emotional paralysis connected to that can really help all of us overcome those unseen, invisible challenges that lie within us. And when I go in these speeches, share my story and start sharing these principles that have helped me. And the book is definitely more of a deep dive because it's just longer. But the speaking, I just love to be able to have that one-on-one interaction with people and, you know, share this story and afterwards be able to talk with folks and see how it's impacted them. It's just amazing what people go through that we can't see. And those are really the most enriching interactions for me is afterwards to really have that heart-to-heart with someone and know that this has helped them. It's amazing that I can do this for my career because I would do it if someone just bought me a beer afterwards to be able to unite my greatest passion and purpose with my career. I feel very lucky to do.
Well, I have to remember that if I want to retain your services as a speaker, just tell me what your favorite beer is. I'll make sure I have that for you.
Well, I have an agent now. So yeah, that's what helps me actually be able to sustain myself because they won't accept the beer.
Maybe if I sweet talk your agent a little bit, maybe he'll...
That's the good way to go, yeah.
Okay, you know, for sure. Now, you never underestimate your value with anything that you do.
Totally, totally. It's just been a wonderful journey. And I mean, I love it. I'm going to get on a plane today over down to LA to be able to go deliver this message.
Oh, wonderful. My thoughts will be with you for a safe trip and another impactful message.
Yeah, thank you.
So, can you share... Going back to your speaking experiences, a memorable moment or interaction you had with an individual witness one of your talks, just something that is most memorable for you. I don't need real names or details or places, just in general, if you can think of something, Robert.
Yeah. I do think I have one that comes to mind immediately. I was down south, like LA area, about a year and a half ago, and I was speaking to an internship program at a company down there. And, you know, a lot of engineers, just like brilliant students, college students who are doing amazing things and delivering this message. It was wonderful. The engagement was awesome. And right before I left, there was this guy who comes up to me and he's got like tears in his eyes. And he's like, nobody else knows this, Robert, but I have stage 4 cancer right now. And my doctor, they estimate I have approximately like 4 months to live. And, you know, I got this internship and my parents think that I'm crazy for doing this, but I didn't want this injury, this cancer to hold me back in any way. And, you know, and it's just like this message helped me in ways that I can't even describe. I really needed to hear this today. And I was like doing everything I could not to just cry in front of this person. But I think just by him living his life, he taught me so much more than I taught him in my talk. And this person did pass away maybe probably about 6 months after our interaction.
Yeah.
You know, his spirit lives on in me in so many ways. And I think about him, I pray for him every single day. And it's moments like that where when I'm going through a difficult moment, and trust me, I do. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like, why do I have to go through this? I go back to interactions like that. And I think, you know what? I don't even know if I would change this, because if this didn't happen to me, if I didn't break my neck, I wouldn't have been able to deliver that message and have that interaction with a person like that. So it's moments like that that are just extremely profound for me. You know, again, just entrenched in suffering, but through that perseverance, that suffering is so dimmed by the incredible inspiration that's provided from it.
Yeah, and you look at this young man and, you know, immediately my thoughts would go to the parents, because I've been in that situation where mm-hmm. I know what it's like to lose a child. And
yeah,
I could always resonate with the pain of a parent who's lost a child, even if I've never met them, because the pain is so universal.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at this young man and say, look, I got 4 months to live. I'm going to live whatever remaining time I have in my life to the fullest and try to make as big of much of an impact as I can. And leave as much of a mark on this earth as I can. And he's going to be remembered by a lot of people just for the attitude and the perseverance he displayed during his end of life chapter.
He is. You know, he was probably about 21 years old when he passed away, but he did more in those 21 years than many people do in an entire lifetime. It's just, it's an incredible, incredible example that I lean on often.
Yeah, and I would go back to that. And there are certain interactions that I've had with students or with other individuals who have gone through life-altering trauma that stay with me. Mm. And there are days where I'm yearning for the physical presence of my daughter, and those days are going to occur no matter how long it's going to be. I go back to the fact that to be grateful for what I have as opposed to what I don't have, and realize that the bond with my daughter is eternal. And that as a result of understanding that, I've been able to translate that into a life of service.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like that, like what you said about that bond that you have with your daughter is eternal, is something that's really important too. And that's, you know, that's of course guided me very much throughout all of this, that my sufferings that I deal with on this earth aren't it. I don't believe it's the end of it all. I'm working and living for something much greater. And that's really served me in my most difficult moments, to think like, this isn't it. What I do here has real impact and really matters. And I'm fighting for something a lot bigger than these immediate challenges that I'm going through.
Absolutely. I agree with that. You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
I'm right with you. I believe that this is just one stop in our continued existence. I believe we are going to go on. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in a different form, but we're going to go on. And in that case, we are eternal.
Yes. Yes. And then maybe one day I could be running sprints, or I won't even need legs. Who knows? Flying around.
It's all right. You'll be just flying around in the universe, being a part of the great oneness.
Yeah, that's right.
Any other tools you can suggest to our listeners who need to develop or want to develop resilience from life-altering challenges? What other tools you could suggest that would be helpful to them, Robert?
Yeah, you know, it's like my final thoughts as I'm sharing this story, and it's the last chapter of my book. It's an understanding of true success, because my goal on day one was to never need a wheelchair again. And I guess I haven't given kind of my rehab update. I've made an incredible recovery in my upper body, probably about 80%. I can walk 500 yards in my walker now. It would have been a miracle for me to walk 1 yard. I can walk 500. So I've transcended what was set out for me in so many ways, from where I was supposed to be lucky to be able to feed myself. Now I'm able to just accomplish these incredible feats, which continue to produce as I continue to stay on this journey. And I haven't achieved that end goal to be wheelchair independent, to stand up one day and never sit back down in this chair. And as I reflect, I got to think, like, does that mean that I've failed? Does that mean that I'm a failure? I think the answer is absolutely not, because success lies so much deeper than these physical outcomes in my life. I think the true source of my success is that I'm able to live with an incredible adversity with joy, gratitude, and purpose. I think if you have those three things, joy, gratitude, and purpose in your life, it doesn't matter what you're going through or what you've accomplished, you are successful in life. And why is it that we can go to third world Africa right now and find kids who are smiling when they haven't eaten in days? Or we can go over to the Cliffs of Malibu right now in some billionaire's house and find a person who's horribly depressed. It's because these people with the smiles on their faces, they have joy, gratitude, and deep meaning, that purpose in their life. And I think that's something that's really rooted my thoughts on true success. And was really difficult for me to come in tune with. At first, I was thinking, I will not accept anything less. I must walk again. I must get back there. But as time has gone on and I've been able to see that greater impact that I can make rather than just going from point A to point B on my feet, I've found that I have been successful through this journey because of those internal, intangible milestones that I've made mentally and emotionally in my life.
And, you know, one of the things I learned from a spiritual standpoint, the body is just a vehicle to transmit greater teachings and greater wisdoms.
Totally. 100% agree with that. And I think it's that internal component that's just so important. So I think whenever we're going through a really tough time or we have this really daunting goal that we want, and it's not just tragedy, it's accomplishing and achieving great success. When things don't necessarily go as we planned, we should really develop our pride and happiness in life from those internal and tangible things that we have, and that joy, gratitude, success. I think, you know, that's what's most important.
Well, it also goes back to our mental hardware. It's our thoughts dictate our reality. Our thoughts dictate how we feel about the world. Mm-hmm. And if our thoughts are positive, our outlook's going to be positive, regardless of what we have or don't have materialistically. And on the other hand, you could, like you said, have monetary things. You can have cars, you can have a big mansion, and you can still be unhappy because of what's going on inside of your head.
Yeah, and totally, totally.
None of that's giving you any fulfillment, and something's missing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's missing the point of all this.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Robert, one of my last questions for you today. If you're going to leave our listeners with one takeaway today, one ultimate takeaway, what would that be?
Yeah, it's that life is a gift. And on May 6, 2017, I started off the day getting ready to win a national championship. And at the end of the day, I didn't know whether or not I'd survive. We see all these examples in our life where life can change in an instant and very unexpectedly. And I don't think that's reason for us to just throw on our bubble wrap before we start to get out of our house. I think what we really ought to focus more on is just that gratitude for each day that comes our way. But when we wake up in that morning, to start immediately taking inventory of the gratitude for the fact that we just woke up and the things that are around us, because everything we see is temporary, everything. So every moment that we have it is really a gift. And I think we should embrace each day like we just received a gift. So have a smile on your face when you get a gift and unwrap it and enjoy it and say thank you for it. I think that's kind of my final words today. And if I was going back to talk to myself in the hospital when I was going through it, it would be to really treat each day like a gift, because it is.
I agree. Mm-hmm. My last question.
Yeah.
People want to get in touch with you, purchase your book, find out more about your services, request you as a speaker. What's the best way for them to do that, Robert?
Yeah. For speaking, right to the website, robertpaler.com. And then for the book, Paralyzed to Powerful, look it up on Google, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the online retailers got it in paperback, hardcover, and then that audiobook as well, which can be found through Audible. And then when it comes to just following on this journey, all the big social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, X, LinkedIn, TikTok, just look up Robert Paler. I kind of got a monopoly on the name, Robert Paler. It's kind of an uncommon last name, but I just so enjoy being able to share this positivity. And what sometimes when you're scrolling down a feed can be a lot of conflict and negativity. And I share those daily rehab updates of me continuing to stay after it. So right after this podcast, I'm going to go and start working on standing up right now, and I'll post that. And I hope people they feed that mental diet of theirs through following along with this.
Well, certainly if anybody's having a bad day or needs a source of inspiration or is feeling sorry for themselves, all they need to do is check out your story. Check out your videos, see the progress that you've made.
Yeah.
And again, you're a walking testament to the power of resilience. So
yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, my pleasure. And Robert, thank you so much for a great conversation today. I truly enjoyed it. And maybe there'll be a follow-up in our future. Who knows?
I would love it. But thank you so much for today, Dave. Seriously, so much gratitude for you.
And likewise. Yeah. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.